Nigerian. Come on, Fulham. Come on.
Hello and welcome to the That's So Craven podcast, your Fulham podcast from Down Under, here again to discuss Fulham's win against Brighton on the weekend, a 3-0 hammering to remain undefeated against the Seagulls in the Premier League. Here to discuss it all, we have Dave at Crave. How are we going, Dave?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well. Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're going to have to change your Twitter handle soon. I think people are baying for Dave at Crave.
Yeah. Well, I do love a nickname, and I took a lot of enjoyment out of that one at the weekend.
Good stuff there. Thanks for joining us. Sammy, how are we going tonight?
If anything, Jack, like, why? This is cause for jubilance. This is cause for mega, mega hype. You gave me a low energy intro. We just smashed Brighton 3-0. I'm doing amazing. No, I'm stoked to be here. This is great. I'm about to set off a firecracker. Like, yeah, let's go.
Let's do it.
It's just the norm now. We just win every week. So I'm, pretty chilled. And Dad, how are we going tonight?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks. Thanks for having me. And really good to be here. Welcome again, Dave.
So let's crack straight into it. I mean, there's a lot to talk about. It's a game we were all very excited for in the first place. But, I don't think any of us could have really seen this result coming. I know Brighton was struggling with injuries, maybe not in the best form at the moment, but they're a good side. We've seen it over the last couple of years that they constantly challenging for those European spots, doing well in Europe this season as well. But geez, we were just on. Dave, you were at the game. What was it like in the stadium on the day?
Yeah, I think a bit, we talked about it last week in the pod leading up to the game, that there was quite a bit of optimism, really, just given the coming off the back of the win at Old Trafford, and then how we played, and then how Brighton had such an extensive injury list. I think the general feeling amongst fans before the game was one of positivity and optimism. And I thought the atmosphere in Craven Cottage was pretty good on the day.
Certainly sounded it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those games where, like you said, there was a positive feeling around it, but it's just, if you can actually turn that into a result, which I find often Fulham kind of struggle to do when teams are there to be taken, or when we're on a really good run of form, we do struggle to take that next step and actually capitalize on it quite often. We saw it towards the end of last season. There was this European push, and then it just sort of petered out towards the end of the year. And I know the whole Man United in the cup incident happened, and that was a big factor, I guess, but this was one of those instances where we saw Man United as an opportunity to take points, and we did. We saw Brighton as an opportunity to take points, and we did. Sam, do you think it's setting us up for a really good run-in for the rest of the season? I mean, the name of the pod today is still European Dreaming, ? Do you think, based on a result like this, we're potentially on an upward trajectory towards those European spots?
I mean, if we play the exact same way that we played against Brighton, against any other team, I thought we looked, I'm not sure how it felt on the ground, Dave, but I thought we looked scintillating. I thought we looked ridiculously good. Harrison Reed in particular was just, he was so animalistic. He really, really won me over again, and I need to revoke all the not necessarily nice things I've said about him in the course of this season. If we play like that against any other team, every single game can potentially be ours. Not sure if that will lead to enough points for a cup run, but I mean, going into next season, I mean, who's to say? Who is to say?
Well, I think the thing is, we're very close, if not just about already there in terms of safety. So surely that changes the way everyone thinks about it and everyone approaches it from now. So there's some freedom. But is it not that if you look at that, the times when those goals were scored, the difference scoring two goals in the first half and your opponent scoring none, I mean, that's, that is a luxury we do not often benefit from, really, unless we're going to put five past someone. But just against a really good opposition, when we feel like we've got an opportunity, how often do we score two goals before halftime? Doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But that's all about energy, surely. Now there's just a huge energy in the group, and I say it really does start from Muniz, and I reckon the Muniz transformation has actually fired up a number of players. I really believe that.
Dave, in and around the crowd, I mean, just from the chat you're hearing in your seat, what's the sort of vibe around Muniz? Obviously, we've seen him score, I think it's five in his last five now. There's some talk of him potentially around the Brazilian squad. And there's been obviously a transformation in the last couple of months, really, even though Silva's obviously backed him and realizes that he does have some raw ability. But do the people at the cottage feel like Muniz might be the answer going forward next season, or do you feel like there's still going to be a search for a number one striker?
I think people are still waiting to see when this bubble bursts. But with every game, the confidence in him grows, and you can feel that. I mean, he's a bit of a crowd favorite anyway. I think it's just he comes across so well. He's so positive, isn't he? And he always does a little.
He's a lovely bloke, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Look, the little samba when he scores as well. Mm. People enjoy that. Mm. So I think he's a popular player anyway. But I think everyone was just kind of thinking, I can't really believe what they're seeing. And it's not just the goals either. It's the all round play. You mentioned that there, Elton, about the first goal, and you know that really was him, wasn't it? I mean, making a chance out of nothing. And Adam Webster, who he was up against there, he's an experienced Premier League hard centre back, and he just got bullied all afternoon, really, by
Muniz as well.
Yeah, So it was. It's one of those where the crowd are really behind him. He's getting a lot of support, and deservedly so. And I think there's a growing kind of excitement now, really, about actually is this the guy now? Is this the man moving forward? Going back to your question, I think everyone's still kind of thinking ahead of the summer. We will need to bring someone else in as well, because Broya is only here on loan, and you know, especially with Muniz doing the business now, are we likely to spend the money Chelsea want for him? Given he's still early days, of course, but given his limited appearances so far, it's unlikely. So I think there's a feeling that we will need to bring someone else in, but everyone's just enjoying this Muniz ride, and long may it continue.
What do you guys reckon? Come on, quick vote, Jack. Is Muniz the guy, Sam? Jack?
Sam or Jack?
I don't think we can make that call quite yet. I kind of agree, not so much waiting for the bubble to burst, but waiting to see how he goes because how many games are left in the season? About 12? Waiting to sort of see how he goes before the end of the season, and if he goes on a streak of maybe three or four games without scoring a goal, how he plays during those games, and then how he bounces back from there, rather than seeing the bubble burst and him just going back to a championship bench player. I want to see how he reacts off the back of that. If he keeps his head up and keeps playing well despite not scoring, I'd say we probably do have our long-term man, maybe not next season, but over the next 4 or 5 years, I could see Muniz being the man, and what a man he is.
I'm not sure if I see him being the man. I say it with like a lot of love. I love this Muniz run and narrative at the moment. I've said it many, many times. The only thing I think Muniz is actually really, really benefiting from at the moment is being a really, really fresh face in the Premier League. So no one really kind of knows this guy. No one knows like really how he plays, because I mean, we're only just starting to see what his potential is. It'll be really interesting to see in like a season's time where he's getting a lot more rotation if other teams start to work him out, and then what player he is, because I think that's going to be the real test of long-term what value he's going to be giving us, because he's definitely going to be giving us some value. And I think we're going to have to also get another striker in. ideally probably with the assumption of maybe taking a spot, so probably spend some money on a decent striker, and then just basically see them battle it out. Because yeah, I think he's really, really great right now. But I think he is also really relishing in the fact that no one really knows this guy.
You see, the really funny thing about all this, I reckon everyone is thinking the exact same way. Everyone wrote him off. Come on, everyone except Silver and the staff wrote him off. We're all eating humble pie, which tastes incredible. Mm-hmm. And no one is really prepared to back themselves anymore about this guy. But let's say the bubble bursts and he goes through a little bit of a difficult period and he comes back and he doesn't score 4 out of 6, but maybe he scores 5 out of 10. That's still a ridiculous number of goals. If he scores 5 out of 15, he's scoring 15 plus goals in the Premier League. And that's a pretty good striker in your back pocket, right? And I cannot wait to see how he goes against City, against Spurs, and whatever, because I think that is the acid test. Let's say he goes well. He doesn't have to score for me, but if he creates the kind of assists he did for Harry Wilson, well, that's exciting, man. That is what you turn up. That's what you turn up for, because it terrifies oppositions. Just like Mitro had a way of doing that, right? He used to sing about it. But that energy and that strength and that never, ever say die is terrifying. And he's putting himself about.
He's so generous as well. And like he always has been. And I think it just generally shows in like his character. He seems like a really, really good team player. And I think the fact that he's also creating assists as well as goals is really indicative of just somebody that I want to keep around for like the next 3 years or so.
Surprisingly, the assist against Brighton was his first assist of the season. I'd also say his stats for the season probably don't tell the full story. He's made 15 appearances in the league, but I mean, the majority of those have been off the bench. You know, I'm looking through the season so far, 4 minutes against Brentford, 9 minutes against City, 12 against Sheffield United, 20 against Newcastle, 8 against Chelsea. You can't really say that he's played 15 games of football. He's really only been a starter for 8 games this season. And to have the return of 5 goals, having been such a bit part player, is really good. The fact that when he actually starts games of football, he's scoring goals, makes me think that if he'd started all season, we'd be seeing him score maybe 12, 13 goals, maybe a few more than that. And that's a really good return for a mid-table striker who's not, you know, £100 million Ollie Watkins, Ivan Toney, that kind of player. So I think there's something there with Muniz. It's just about how we develop him from here and how he develops as well personally. He's only 22. I'm kind of surprised. He's only 5'10", and he was up against defenders on the weekend who are, you know, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", out-jumping them comfortably and just hassling them off the ball as well. The fact that he's still so young at 22 means that he's still got some muscle to put on. He's still got a bit of speed to probably pick up as well over the next couple of years. If he can work on some of his passing, some of his hold-up play, I think we've got a serious rough diamond there. And I really hope we see him develop and we hold on to him for an extended period of time. And I think this little run of games is hopefully what actually keeps him at the club long term. Let's talk about the first goal. We did sort of mention it, mentioned Muniz's part here, but geez, Harry Wilson had a very good game. I'm a massive fan of Harry Wilson starting, especially out on the right. Dave, your thoughts on Wilson's performance from inside the stadium?
I thought he was excellent. I think Mooney's got the official man of the match, but he can't have been far behind.
I think Wilson actually got it on the Premier League's website.
On the Premier League's, okay. Yeah. Okay. I think the club gave it to Muniz, I believe. But I couldn't argue with Wilson picking up that award. He was really at it, wasn't he? We've seen him at it off the bench a lot this season, but not so much when he started. This was the first time I can recall in a while, actually, where he's really stepped up and you know, from minute go and performed. And you know, as soon as that ball went to him in that position there, after of course Muniz had kind of you know, created that chance and got the ball through to him, it was just a degree of confidence, really. As soon as you'd seen him turn onto his left foot, you just know what a weapon that is. And it's a fantastic finish. You know, all the plaudits have gone to Muniz, and I understand why, but it is a fantastic finish. And it's quite interesting as well. I saw a little stat after the game. I don't know, goals, of course, are the number one stat when you look across, you know, who's providing the goals, but assists as well. Wilson's actually top now of goals and assists in terms of all of our players' output, which is really surprising because he hasn't played as much as some of the other guys, you know. So it just shows that there's a really quality player in there. And I'm really pleased that he's managed to, you know, put in such a good performance from the start.
Sammy, your thoughts? I know we always toss up every week when we're sort of going through what we'd like to see as a predicted lineup, who should start on the wing. I'm a huge fan of Wilson personally. I'm not sure your thoughts. Do you?
Oh,
I lost Jack. Wilson or Bobby, Jack, Sam? Wilson or Bobby?
Oh, Wilson or Bobby? Ooh, okay. Okay. The only thing I would probably it's hard, isn't it? Because I feel that Wilson, right, really, really, really benefits from being in a squad selection that allows him to play confidently and give him time, or at least trust who he's working with. I'm not really sure why, for whatever reason, him and Jimenez together never really seemed to like link up. Maybe their just styles just didn't necessarily complement each other too much. Muniz and Wilson, there's something about that partnership where they just seem to have like a lot of trust with each other. I mean, surely they've been playing together now for quite a while, like at least 3 years that they've been in. They've at least known each other and been familiar with one another. And I think Wilson really, really needs people around him supporting him for him to actually thrive. He's always kind of had that. He's never really been a Willian or even, frankly, an Iwobi who can just, whatever game he's in, really take charge. He needs somebody edging him along. I mean, Christ, remember how long it even just took him to just find himself after his injury. He needed a lot. On his day, Wilson can be fantastic. Bobby is really, really consistent though. So it's more about who we're playing. I don't think Wilson for me has fully cemented himself as the out and out starter. I know we haven't even gotten onto it yet, but it will be for me. I think Iwobi is so good, and he just adds so much to every single game that he's in. I know you haven't even asked the question if Iwobi starts every game, but Iwobi just creates so much, and I thought he was so integral to this game. Wilson played fantastic, but I just want to highlight Iwobi as well because I thought he was incredible all game.
Yeah, it appears I dropped out, but I did actually ask if it was Iwobi or Wilson for you. But
So Dad then asked me if it was Bobby or Wilson, and I just
get better internet. Get better internet.
But look, I think Iwobi again. Yeah, I agree. He had a really good game. Iwobi's always busy, and he has played well on the right. But I do still see Wilson, and as you said, Dave. While Sam was talking, I was just looking up the stats. Because you mentioned that Harry Wilson's got the most goals and assists. And, yeah, he's got, in the league, 3 goals, 5 assists. He's got the most assists equal with Pereira, and he's the third highest goal scorer for us this season as well. He really does create a lot. And the fact is he also hasn't played quite as many minutes as some players. He's played the same amount as Iwobi, who's got 4 goals and 1 assist. So if you're talking about goal scorers, I think Iwobi is probably proving that he's more of a goal scorer. But Harry Wilson seems to actually create more for the team at the moment. And, Dad, I'll pose this question to you because we saw it with the second goal, which is the Muniz goal. what a brilliant ball that is from Harry Wilson. And Wilson and Moniz seem to actually be on the kind of Willian Cairney level of understanding at the moment, where they both seem to know where each other's going to be. They seem to make the right runs for each other. Do you feel like those two playing together, and the fact that Moniz is probably one of the first names on the team sheet, do you feel like that actually boosts Wilson's potential selection because of that?
Interesting. So Moniz is actually pulling Wilson through. That's funny.
Well, I mean, in a way, yes. It's the same way. Hilarious. I think Willian pulls Cairney through sometimes as well.
Yeah. Oh, most likely to be completely true, but I just think it's very funny. It's kind of ironic. Yeah, even though Harry Wilson's been playing with Moniz for a long time, has anyone been playing with this Moniz? Can anyone really say that they always knew where he was going to be? It just didn't happen. I don't believe it.
No,
I'll pose it to you that I do believe it, because Marco has put so much faith in this 22-year-old Brazilian who hasn't really shown much, but on the training ground, he must be making those runs. He must be putting the ball in the back of the net. So maybe we haven't seen it, but everyone else at Motspur Park sees it day in, day out and goes, why isn't this bloke scoring in the league? Because he's such a good striker and he's getting in the right spots. It's just not working for him yet, which we saw with Jimenez as well when he came in, and Silva just persisted and persisted because on the training ground, it must be going right.
Well, the other interesting thing, when you were talking about Muniz's appearances this year, and I was thinking about, I really felt sorry for him because no one doubted his effort when he came off the bench, but he was really ineffective, and he was sort of running around, just actually not being in the right place. But could that be because we weren't serving him very well as well? And it's amazing that I kind of think now, even if he dropped to the bench and was given 15 minutes, I reckon he'd be an utter handful and quite likely to score if he now came on. I actually think in his head, he would be highly impactful if he came on in the dying stages of a game. Yeah, it's just, and obviously professional sport and sport is all about confidence. But at this level, when your job is to put goals in the back of the net, it's everything, absolutely everything. And this is the evidence of it, isn't it?
Yeah. Dave, I'll pose this one to you. There's some comparisons floating around on Twitter regarding Muniz and comparing him to Mitro. Do you feel like they are a similar style and type of player, or do you think we're just comparing him to Mitro because he can score goals regularly?
No, I do think there's some similarities. I actually think that was why Muniz was brought in the first place, to be Mitro's backup in the year that we got promoted, because there's similarities in the way they play. In terms of the hold-up play and they're competing physically for headers and for and challenges, really. So I think there was some logic in that, in bringing him in, so that if there was a period where Mitrovic was out, we would have a similar style centrepiece to our attack to work off. And what I would say is what he hadn't shown really was the ability to get in the 6-yard box and start getting on the end of things until fairly recently. And that's now that is starting to look like Mitrovic, what I would say as well is that, what's exciting is he seems to have a bit more, he's a bit more mobile as well than Mitro, which means that gives you this kind of like hope that maybe he's got this higher ceiling than Mitrovic, that, if he can continue this kind of development. And I know I'm getting carried away here, but
no, it's great.
What's wrong with getting carried away here?
It's true. I reckon everyone's thinking it. No one's just got the chin and confidence to stick their neck out and go, he's going to be better than Mitro. I can see it. No one's prepared to say that.
I just don't know why they haven't given like Silva $100 million, because he's clearly a clairvoyant. Like, he can just see things that we just cannot see.
Because he doesn't need it. He can pay $8 million for Muniz instead.
Oh, honestly, just imagine if he had all the resources, because he could just predict the future.
I do wonder, in a way, though, when you talk about giving all the resources in the world. Look at someone like a Roy Hodgson, who took little old Fulham to a European Cup final. He then takes over at Liverpool with all the resources available, and he can't replicate it because his, not his level as such, but the way he works is more suited to that level of player and pushing people really hard and getting the most out of mid-table players effectively and turning mid-table players into pushing top six players. But if you actually gave Silva $200 million to spend and said bought in all these superstars, maybe it doesn't quite click in the same way. And maybe what we actually need is him to work on a bit of a budget and find these guys and say, I really need to consider how much money I'm willing to spend on someone before I spend it. And so if you spend 20 on Iwobi, which we did, you make sure that Iwobi is definitely the right player to fit into the system, which it's proving that he kind of is. Same with Polina. You make sure you pick the right players for your system and you don't overspend and go a bit silly with your money and start buying players outside of what you actually need. So it's a toss-up. I'd love to see what would happen if Silva was given a couple hundred million to spend, but I also kind of want a reset button there just in case to just go back in time to beforehand and keep it comfy where we currently are at the moment.
I think my point is more like, I think, believe it or not, I think Silva is actually a reasonable man, even though he's crazy. I think he wouldn't, even if he had a couple million to spend, he might not necessarily even spend it on players. But I just want to give him whatever he wants because I just want to keep him happy. And I just want
I think that's a really good, it's an absolutely solid point. You know, we're reverse engineering reality and trying to come up with a story here for what is surely the truth that the club and the Khans are being stingy. They're not spending the money. Otherwise, you would have reinvested at least part of Mitro's money back into a striker. It just doesn't make any sense. So I don't think we're trying to sort of campaign for him to have £200 million budget, but you just want him to have whatever he needs. And I don't think he has whatever he needs. He's shown the frustration. He's shown his frustration. He doesn't.
It's an interesting conversation to have because I look at the squad now and sort of looking at the team lineup on the weekend, and admittedly you're missing Willian, who probably isn't back to full strength. You're missing Polina, but you look at the starting lineup, and then I looked at the bench and I just saw it and I sort of went, geez, that's a pretty good bench all of a sudden. We've got Adama, who proved what he can do against Man United, Tom Cairney, who's having a great season, Diop on the bench as your backup centre back. Balotore has looked pretty handy whenever he comes on. Willian on the bench, admittedly missing a backup striker, really, but Decadova Reed coming off the bench. Like it was a really strong bench. And the fact is, we made some really good substitutions as well, where we were able to effectively create that goal at the end through fresh legs and good fresh legs. So it all of a sudden does look like a pretty decent deep squad, even though we've been complaining about it a little bit this year that we're short on the ground. But when everyone's actually fit, it is a pretty good squad. And I was talking to Dad today about it when we were just in the car driving. I just sort of said, geez, you look at the fact that we've got Lukic and Reed in the background, and you know, we were clamoring about, geez, what the hell happens if Polina goes? And we've played two games with Polina. We beat Man United and we beat Brighton comfortably in both of them without him. And all of a sudden, maybe if Polina goes and we pick up 50 mil for him and we picked up 50 for Mitro, we've got 100 mil in the bank extra, and we've seen that we can sort of survive. You bring in the right players to replace. We're actually kind of looking in a good spot for next season.
Can I pose a question to the group? Harrison Reed, because I feel that we still haven't fully discussed it yet. I thought he was incredible, and I kind of feel a little bit bad at like how much I've written him off this season. For me, for the next couple of games, I think you have to start Harrison with Polina. He's really been that impressive in the last two games for me. What's everybody else's take?
Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, you know, with everyone fit now, and And Marco, I think Elton mentioned it last week and he called it that, you know, Silva's very unlikely to change a winning team. And that seems to, that kind of proved itself on Saturday. But there's so much competition. I think it's bringing out the best in a lot of players, you know, particularly the forward players. But I'd also say, you know, Lukic and Reed have really stepped up too. But I think even when you look at what came off the bench on Saturday, Bobby Reed seems to have a bit between his teeth and he played a massive part in that last goal. You've got Traore now. He got an assist last week. He scored the final goal this week. Lots and lots of players knocking on the door. Polina coming back next week. It's just, it's becoming really difficult to see, you know, first of all, how you could introduce changes into a winning side. We've picked up such good results like this. But secondly, you know, some of these players like Willian and Polina, they're our best players and surely they're going to find themselves back in the team sooner or later. So it's a really interesting one. But Harrison Reed, he stepped up. He had a great game. He had a good game at Old Trafford as well. And it's the big question is this weekend and what Silva's going to do. I honestly can't tell you. I think if I was to guess, I'd say he'd probably keep the same side again and let the guys have another go. But who knows? You know, it's maybe he'll have some tactical adjustments. Who knows?
Well, we kind of inadvertently did have a chat about this today, and it is that trade off between Silva really digging his heels in and loving to pick a winning side, and he likes rewarding people who are doing well, but you know. Charles Polina, he's surely number one name on the team sheet. Mm-hmm. He's not returning from, you know, a month of rehab for a hamstring and we're managing him back in. He's fit. He's must be absolutely raring to go with two wins. He'd want to be part of this.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd be absolutely raring to go. So what do you do? Maybe Silva appeases the changing room by saying these tactically he comes in. I know what I normally do, but he comes in because we need him. Ooh. But what a luxury for us to have. Ooh. Because you know that even if a different structure, you know, Kenny and Polina, for example, together, if that's what he wanted to go with, you know that Harrison Reed and Sasa Lukic are probably going to do just fine. If that's who we have to go with. Brilliant.
Well, yeah, look, I think he makes changes. I can't possibly see Zhao being left out of the team. As I was saying to Dad today, think about if we still had Mitro around at the moment and he was available for the next game and he'd been out and that's the reason Muniz is playing, Mitro would be straight back into the team. He's your first name on the team sheet and the team is kind of built around Polina. As much as we might not want it to be, knowing that he might not be around next season, but he's our best player. He is creative. He scores goals. He's defensively sound. I think you just have to make a change, even though we're two on the trot and in really good form with the current setup that we've got. I don't see how he doesn't change it. I also think we'll probably see, maybe we won't see Willian. I think Willian probably has to wait for his chance to get back into the team. I think Pereira had a fairly good game again, as he did against Man United. And Iwobi had a very good game and has had a couple of good games. So he probably keeps that spot over Willian. But I just think Polina comes in. I agree that Reed has been pretty good the last couple of games. I don't think he's been outstanding personally for me. He's been, you know, dogged and done the job that's been asked of him. But if I'm starting Polina, I probably want Kearney alongside him, especially when you take on a team like Wolves. I want someone with a bit more creativity. I think you lose a lot from deep if we don't have Kearney in there. Reed and Polina, I wouldn't expect would be able to be creative enough to create a lot coming out of defence. At that point, we just rely on Bassey and Tosin basically playing long balls forward or trying to play out through the midfield, which causes issues. If you've got Cairney dropping a little bit deeper to collect that ball, they play through Cairney a little bit more often and then go out wide, and we see the ball move forward a little bit cleaner. So I like what Harrison Reed's been doing, and he's unlucky to get dropped for me, but I think Reed and Lukic probably lose their spots. Lukic is more likely to hold his over Reed, I think, because I'd like to see Lukic and Polina actually play alongside each other. I think they both would be able to contribute defensively, and I think when Lukic actually starts, I think he'll create more going forward when he's got Polina alongside him.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. If it was me, I would bring Zhao back in. I think that even as good as the performance was on Saturday, you know, Brighton had a hell of a lot of possession. And there was just a few moments in the game that kind of went our way, wasn't there? You know, they did create some chances at 2-0. Ferguson, I remember one where he was played through and he kind of dink it over Leno, just rolled past the post. They hit the post, of course. And was there one that Bassey misjudged to bounce over the top and Ferguson got in and made quite a good save low down? And
yeah, there was he made a good save. There was a couple of little half chances, a couple of little offside chances as well. Yeah. They were definitely pushing, and you're right. It was falling our way, I think.
We got on those moments went our way. But there were times where we were under. As well as Reed and Lukic are doing, and they are doing a great job, I just kind of, there was a part of me that missed Joao Polina, you know, breaking up that play and getting us back on the attack quicker. Because you just know he can do that. You just know he can, he's got the most interceptions in, you know, all the top five leagues, doesn't he, over the last two seasons. You know, he's going to, that's in his locker. And it feels crazy. We're talking about a 3-0 defeat here and I'm picking holes in it. But I just felt a little bit like, you know, that pressure could have been reverted. And fortunately, we were on the end of all the positive moments, all those little moments, and didn't need him. But I do think that he would bring something to the team, particularly away from home next week. And for me, he comes back in, as you say. I just don't know if it's for Lukic or Reed. I guess that's the system. That depends on the system that Silva chooses to play on the day. But he comes back in for me too.
I mean, to quote Carl Pilkington, if you're complaining about the wrinkles on your dick, your life's pretty good. And we have good problems right now. And I just want to keep having good problems like these.
Interesting quote to go with, but I'll take it. It's a good point that Dave made as well, sort of saying that things did sort of fall our way a few times. I genuinely think we should have scored 5 or 6 on the weekend. And we were kind of lucky. And I was saying it when Dad and I were watching the game. If this was against a Liverpool or an Arsenal or any of those sort of top half, maybe top 8 sides, they'd put you away on their day. And those missed opportunities when we probably should have gone 3-4-0 up. I'd say it should have been 3-0 at halftime. And in the second half, quite early on, there were a couple of easy chances. Not easy, but the one that stands out is Pereira threw on goal and somehow running all the way to the byline and then doing nothing with it. And there were multiple times when that happened, and we were sort of lucky, I think, that Brighton didn't take their handful of chances, because this sort of screamed the Burnley 2-2 game where we're just a little bit wasteful and they take their chances and all of a sudden you've lost points. And in a way, I sort of walked away thinking we've won 3-0, but kind of feels fractionally lucky in a way, even though I think we dominated the game, but we got away with a few things there. And the chances that we missed, we really do need to be taking those going forward, because like I said, we've got some games coming up against City, against Liverpool, Tottenham, Newcastle, where you will be punished for those. And if we're a little bit more clinical, we do probably walk away from those four games I mentioned with points. But if we play the way we did in just a few little sort of 10-minute periods where we just let it slip a little bit, and I think Marco will definitely be looking at that on the training ground. You know, you can sort of tell he's that kind of manager who you win 3-0, and you don't get a day off. You win 3-0 and you're back on the training ground and he's telling you all the shit that you did wrong, but in a way that he's just driving you forward to get the best out of you. And I feel like there's still stuff to work on, but it's all really positive, the fact that we might not be playing at our 100% best, but you're still walking away with wins. That's the kind of team that you want to be at the end of the day. We'll talk about the final goal as well, and it really did feel like an injury time goal, a breakaway. I have no idea where Breuer was here, as you'd kind of expect him to be the man who I was thinking would be tapping in his first goal for Fulham, but it's Bobby Deckard over Reed, who I think he gets released by Willian, a little pass through for Bobby, and Bobby takes his time, waits for the perfect pass, and is able to put it through for Adama. He kind of felt like Adama was surely going to score one of these at some point, and he slots it really calmly past the keeper to make it 3-0 and completely kill off the game if it wasn't already dead at that point. A really good all-round win for Fulham, even though we have spent 40 minutes picking holes in it so far. Have to say that it was a very good victory, and one we should be sort of looking back on fondly at the end of the season. We remain undefeated against Brighton, and I think they're our bunnies now officially. Can't get one over us. One thing to sort of talk about, the fact it's a clean sheet. It's not something we've seen many times this season. I guess get everyone's thoughts on how the defence played. Do we think Castagne's holding a spot over Tete and Tete's really going to struggle to get back in the team? And do we think Tosin and Bassi are definite starting back two for the rest of the season?
Who's first? Yeah, well, I'll go first. I'm sort of amazed at how Kenny Tete can't get a game. It's astonishing to me. And he has had a few little opportunities, but he's struggled to find form. And so Castagne holding that position is perfectly justified. I miss Kenny Tete because I love what you get out of him. And in a fighting side, oh, I love having him on my side, because he's so up for it and he's got an energy about him. And Castagne is very workmanlike, but Kenny Tete is a fighter and he's great. He's great to watch. I thought Tosin and Bassi were really, really good. Again, Bassi particularly so. He can't put a foot wrong at the moment, can he? Mm. I thought Robinson was pretty good in general as well. You know, they really didn't look. I know Ferguson had some very, very good opportunities, and this surely has to be a game where they must have walked away feeling that there was something in it for them, and they absolutely did not actually take it. But we defended well, and as Jack mentioned while we were watching, and I think he commented on Twitter, we did not look overly troubled. We did not feel like we were under threat and just holding the wall up for a torrent to come through at any moment. I thought we did really well.
You all laughed at me at the start of the season when I said Silva was intentionally picking Castagne over Tete, and now it's fully come to fruition. I think Castagne is the guy. I think he's been fantastic. I love what he brings to the squad in terms of his technique. I still love Kenny Tete. I can love two people at the same time. But I do think how we play at the moment, Timmy is excellent. And I love the Tosin Bassi partnership. I love it so, 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 so much. I've heard that Iwobi's dad is trying to force Tosin to come play for the Nigerian squad, because apparently Tosin can actually do that. So I think Bassi as well is just trying to convince him to join the Nigerian squad as well. And they work so well together. I really, really love our entire back line at the moment. I think they just allow so much time for everyone else, just because there's so much trust there. Like, we got it covered at the back at the moment. And as you said, I genuinely don't know how Tete gets in. I don't know if he gets in. Obviously he'll have like cup games in, but for the moment, Castagne's the guy.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't foresee really any changes to the defense now, unless there's injuries or suspensions. I think read something that I think they've played 7 games together, Bassi and Tosin, and we've won 5 of them. So that's a really good sign. And they just look really reassured. They seem to complement each other really well. And I would say that they're our strongest centre-back pairing. In terms of fullbacks, of course, Robinson holds left-back, and, you know, unless he's injured, he's not coming out. In terms of Tete and Castagna, however, that really is, you know, I'm a huge Kenny Tete fan. And without, you know, saying any, you know, there's nothing against Timothy Castagna, who's a very, very capable, steady player. I actually think that a kind of fully fit playing Tete is, you know, gives us a little bit more. But because Castagna's kind of held his own, kept the place, done really well, and Kenny's not played that much and hit a few injuries recently, you know, to bring him back in, I feel that he won't be kind of match sharp like Castagna is. And I think he's just going to have to wait for his turn and wait for Castagna to either drop off a little bit in form or have an injury for him to get his place back. But it's bizarre because, as I say, I think if I was picking my perfect team, you know, Kenny Tete would probably get the nod. But at the moment, I just don't think you can take Castagna out.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I think Tete is kind of a better player than Castagna. But in terms of form and, like Dave said, match fitness as well, I don't think you can drop Castagna. Not to say that Castagna is a bad player, but Tete is a better one-on-one defender, which I think is more valuable in the Premier League, especially when you're coming up against those teams like Liverpool. You know, Tete played against Liverpool this year and just pocketed whoever was put on him. And Robinson's shown that as well. And that's what you want from your wing back. I know that Castagna's probably a little bit better going forward than Tete has been in the last few years, but the fact that these guys, and Kenny Tete especially, is so good one-on-one, that's why I like him in the team. I don't feel nervous when you've got someone taking him on. Like when Castagna was playing with against Man United, every time Garnacho got the ball, I was just a little bit worried that he'd just get skinned. And he did a few times. Garnacho did get past him. And I always note when Tete's playing, players find it impossible to get past him. He's got these bionic legs that just extend as soon as someone tries to step past him. And they can just never get anywhere near the byline often. And that's the benefit of Tete. I totally agree in terms of Tosin and Bassi. They are an insane partnership together and something that is starting to feel similar to the Hangel and Hughes. I just can't see Tosin being here next season, which is a real shame because I think wherever he goes, he's probably going to – the grass is greener at that point, and I think he's going to want to come back to Fulham at some point because I think the decision is being made for a financial reason or anything like that. I just think he thinks that it's time to move on.
It's ambition.
Yeah. I just don't think it's quite the right time for him personally. I think he kind of needs another season or two of development and then you can go and maybe take a big step.
Have a word.
A major highlight for me from the Brighton game was Bassi just pushing Evan Ferguson, who is a big boy, just pushing him off the ball and Ferguson falling like a sack of shit. It was just brilliant. And it just set the tone for the afternoon as well because you saw after that, Ferguson, I think he's quite used to bullying defenders because he's a big boy and he bodies players really well and gets himself in good positions. And at that point, it just sort of felt like Ferguson just, you saw him just get up and be like, what on earth just happened? And you could just see after that in his face, he just looked like, yeah, this is not going to be my afternoon. And it really wasn't. And that's what I think we get out of having someone like Bassi in the lineup playing well, especially.
Can I just also say, Jack, one player that's come under quite a lot of scrutiny for a man who we couldn't speak highly enough of for most of last season and, you know, first half of this, and that's Leno. And I think he had a pretty good game. And I actually think he's the guy who actually kept Brighton out in the second half when there were quite a few opportunities.
Yeah.
I know we've come to expect that level of standard from him, but he came out to get the ball really confidently. He made himself big when it was necessary. And he didn't put a foot wrong. And it's as you know yourself, Jack, I mean, goalkeepers, like wicketkeepers, it's very easy for them to go under the radar. If you have a really solid game, people basically just go, yep, that's what you meant to do. And, you know, so unless you have an absolute blinder where you stop these incredible shots, which is obviously the glory part of it all, that is noticeable. But when they do all the basics really, really well and marshal the defense really well and are confident, and it can often just go under the radar. So I'm giving him a shout out because he always listens. He always listens. So, you know.
I mean, if anyone wants to call out Bert Leno, I will happily fight them in the street. Bert Leno is so integral to the squad at the moment. He is incredible. He's a bit like your nan. He is so wonderful and so reliable. And then you just forget that they're there because you just get so used to the fact that they're wonderful and you appreciate them so much. And then maybe they might yell at you for something like that. And it, like Bert Leno makes minuscule mistakes to the point where when he does make a mistake, I can let it go. I love Bert Leno. Yeah. If you have an issue with Bert Leno, you have an issue with yourself. All right. Just go away.
I will definitely let your grandmother know that you forget about her quite regularly.
Well, I was going to actually make the point publicly about a visit that she called you out on that you didn't make on your last visit to Perth.
Mama, I love you. If you're listening, Mama, I love you.
She does not listen
so much.
She's 95 and you thought you pulled it over and she actually knew.
Guys, let's have a quick look at these stats from the game. It doesn't tell the whole story. It's one of those almost like a meme that you see online when you look at the possession. It's Fulham with 29% to Brighton's 71%. The shots are fairly similar. Fulham with 12 shots on goal, 5 on target. Brighton with 15 on goal, 5 on target. Brighton had 742 passes to Fulham's 307. Jeez. We just don't need that many passes. It's ridiculous. Fulham had 2 corners. Brighton had 6. 16 fouls from Fulham, 10 from Brighton. Dave, you're in the ground. Just a quick mention of the refereeing performance. Your thoughts on how the ref came out for the day? I know he made a couple of decisions early that Brighton fans weren't happy with, but in general, did you think he had a half-decent game?
He did, in the sense that I didn't really notice him too much, and I can't really recall too many things that he got wrong. So I think that suggests he did have a good game. In terms of there was a couple of things we felt in the stadium might have gone to VAR. It wasn't confirmed on the screen, and of course everyone around us were quite aware that Chris Kavanagh was on VAR duty and was a little bit of nerves around that.
Waved it away very quickly.
yeah, he did. And I think one was, I don't know if they checked that Muniz tackle actually at the end of the first half.
They did, yeah. I can't remember who it was who tackled Muniz. I think it was Estupinan. He came in quite hard. Right. His feet were up. He didn't make a huge amount of contact, but you just feel like if that was a tackle on a Man United player, that would be definitely going up to VAR.
Maybe they've gone to VAR, okay. Yeah, so, in a sense that I can't really recall too much about his performance, that suggests he did well. Stats are really interesting. You know, it did feel like a bit like an away game, that they had them having so much of the ball. We're used to having quite a lot of the ball at home. And the stats kind of, that's the game I saw, really. We didn't have the ball. Every time we went forward, we looked like we could score. We're definitely the most threatening on the break. And Brighton, for all their possession, weren't able to really break us down and get as many shots on goal as they would have liked. So using that possession effectively. So, that's the game I saw, really, and it doesn't surprise me to see those numbers.
Let's have a quick look at the table now. A few little movements here, although Fulham still in 12th place. I'd love to actually see a week-by-week table to see where we've been, because I swear we've been in 12th place since about Christmas, if not longer. But we still remain there. But the good thing is we're sort of making some moves up the table now. Chelsea, just the 1 point ahead of us. Wolves, who we play on the weekend, 3 points ahead of us with the same goal difference as well now. And Brighton, just 4 points ahead of us. Newcastle, 5 points ahead of us. So we're really within touching distance now. West Ham up in seventh have 42 points. So they're only 7 points ahead of us. And Man United really are only 9 points ahead of us, which is kind of crazy to think that a few good results and we really could be pushing right into those European spots. And look, the teams above us, I think we spoke about it last time. Their form probably is not quite as good as their league position at the moment. Wolves have been struggling a little bit recently, a couple of injuries on the weekend as well that when we do a preview for the game, we'll talk about. Brighton, we saw, you know, they're struggling with injuries and that's showing in their form. Newcastle have struggled with injuries all season, although they had a good result on the weekend. West Ham, maybe a little higher than you kind of expect, especially after we saw how they played when they came to the Cottage earlier this season. There's definitely the potential there for us to really push high up the table. I'll just sort of get a quick answer off everyone. How far do you think we can go this season? I know there's, 11 games left for Fulham here. If you had to make a prediction as where we finish, where we go. Dave, I'll start with you first because it looked like that question really touched a nerve almost.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting spot to be in because we're safe, in my opinion. I don't think we're under any jeopardy of being dragged into the relegation zone. Now, I think we've probably got enough points on the board to... consider even if the season was to finish now, we'd probably survive, which, you know, so we're not looking down at all. We're only looking up. We've got a fully fit squad. The away games that we've got towards the end of this season, there's a lot of winnable games in there. You know, Sheffield United away, I think we've got Forest away, we've got West Ham away, Brentford away, you know, and it's the home games were a bit tougher, I think. You know, it's the Man City's, the Liverpool's, the Tottenham's, but we've shown that we can kind of beat anyone on our day at home. So I'm really optimistic that we can push on. I'm not sure if we'll quite make Europe. I think we might fall just short. I think I could only be as optimistic to say ninth position is probably is where we could finish if we continue this vein of form towards the end of the season.
Sammy?
I reckon even ninth place is generous. I was thinking best case scenario is probably 10th. And you know what? That's not a criticism. This is the most competitive football league in the world with a very, very... convoluted, compressed top seven now, which is insane. So to finish top 10, I mean, I think realistically we can finish above Chelsea. If we finish above Chelsea, I'll be stoked. But there is some pretty significant hurdles to come. And there's some big teams in there that just aren't going to drop points. So... I don't think that's a criticism on like anything that we're playing. I just can't see us getting above 10th place. I just can't see it. And I would love to be wrong. Let me be wrong. But yeah.
Dad?
Yeah, look, I think Dave makes a really very important point that our tough games are at home and we're a good side at home. If we can keep this form and avoid serious injuries, I really fancy our chances against Man City difficult, but, you know, Liverpool and Spurs, we're playing them at home. I think we are. I fancy that. So why couldn't we, you know, grab quite a handful of points? It then depends on how the teams between, you know, 6 and 12 do against the weaker opposition or the mid-table opposition, because that's where it sort of stands and falls. If they drop games against the kind of weaker opposition, maybe remember the chance. I said 10th last weekend, and I'm starting to believe we could get a little higher than that. So maybe 8 or 9. I'm not willing us for Europe, honestly. I want to save Europe for the second year of a new owner.
where
someone's standing in there with a full sack of money going, what do you need, Marco? What do you actually need? Now that we're in Europe, what do you need?
Yeah, just a megalomaniac Elon Musk figure, like twiddling. Well, you know, we've already got somebody with a mustache, don't we? No, take away the mustache. I don't want that.
I'd be scared if we made Europe right now, honestly. I think it'd be a bit of a massacre.
Don't need it.
No, I disagree with that. I think we've got money to spend in the summer and the basis of a very good squad at the moment. I think admittedly, we'll probably lose Polina, but I think we've probably got the ability to bring in five players on top of that, at which point we probably have enough. But we do at that point have enough to actually compete in Europe, I'd say. And look, if we don't make Europe, totally fine with it as well. I think we'll probably end up in the top half. I'm thinking ninth, maybe even eighth. It really depends on how the teams around us go in terms of those teams a bit higher up the table. If Newcastle can get their act together, if Brighton can get their act together as well, and if Chelsea get their act together before the end of the season, it might be tough for us to climb much higher. But I don't see Wolves staying up there for the rest of the season. And I really think West Ham have a bit of crash to come. I think there's going to be some milestones that Marco will want to hit for the rest of the season. I'm thinking the 15 win mark, which is what we hit last season, which is our most wins in the Premier League. So that's 5 wins from our next 11 games. And I think getting another 19 points to hit that 54-point mark and hit a record there as well for the most points that Fulham have ever got in the Premier League. And 19 points, I think, is quite realistic as well. You look at the fact we've got to play Luton, a Brentford side who are struggling, Palace, Forest and Sheffield United. There's 5 games where we should probably be picking up those 5 wins. And that's 15 points. And then you just need a handful of points on top of that to hit that 54-point mark. And that 54-point mark, I think, quite regularly is about the 8th or 9th place in the league. So I think, you know, it was really interesting. And I did point it out last week in Marco's press conferences last season. It was all about safety, safety. Let's hit 40 points, not thinking about anything else except 40 points. And when asked, with Fulham sitting on 32 points, you know, is it all about survival? Marco said, we're not even thinking about that anymore. We're past that. It's all about how far we can get up the table, how far we can climb, what more we can do. And I think the mindset has shifted there. And he's probably got them all thinking about 15 wins, 54 points, be part of history, possibly even looking at Europe himself as well. So I really feel like we're in a position now where we can challenge and push forward. And it feels like there's nothing to lose because with 35 points, we're probably safe. If you look at the fact that Everton and Forest are both going to drop below 20 points when they get their points deduction, that puts us 15 points clear with 11 games to go. Luton, Burnley, Forest, Everton, Sheffield aren't going to get 5 wins and we're not going to pick up 0 points in that time. So I just don't see us in a relegation scrap whatsoever anymore, even though we haven't hit 40. And I think we're starting to see that shift because it feels like there's a bit of a weight lifted now. You see us play against Man United with no fear. You see us play against a good Brighton side with no fear. And the guys say it as well. They're saying, you know, we go out there, we do what we want. We have a bit of fun. We know that we're a good team and we go out there and play well. And I think we're seeing that in the performances now. And it's definitely a bit of a shift in mentality from a couple of months ago where it was some pretty serious doom and gloom from quite a few corners of the Fulham community where we were a bit worried about getting dragged into it. And now there's a bit of freedom there and you see it in the play. I don't know if that's obvious to everyone, but that's how I'm seeing it at the moment.
I think the thing that's really remarkable is you're absolutely right. It wasn't that long ago that we were rightfully quite concerned about where this was going. The season was not going well and it wasn't that long ago. And it actually proves how long the Premier League season actually is and that you're, you know, from both sides, if you're not doing that well, you know, string a couple of wins together and it can change really. And you can end miles from where you were a few months ago. And it's remarkable, really. I mean, it's part of the challenge of it, but it's also it's quite amazing to me. Like just before Christmas, it wasn't looking good. It was not looking good.
Every Premier League season is like an episode, like a series of Game of Thrones, isn't it? Because you can start in one place and then you can have no idea where you're going to end up until the end of it. And you know what? That's just part of the journey.
And also some of the series were good and some were shit.
That's right. That's very true.
Guys, before we just wrap up for the day, let's have a very quick look at the fixture coming up this weekend. It's against Wolves, as we saw. If we look at the table there, Wolves sitting in 10th place, 3 points ahead of us. If we beat Wolves, we will leapfrog them and effectively sit at least in 11th, depending on the Chelsea result. It will also take us to 11 wins for the season. Just a very quick, I guess, let's have a bit of a guess on how this game's going to go. A bit of prediction. Dave, your thoughts for this game? How do you see it panning out?
Yeah, Wolves are a funny side. Their form, a bit like Brighton, is all over the place. And they're coming off the back of a loss, of course, on Saturday to Newcastle. Brentford beat them recently at Molineux, 3-1, I think. So clearly there's an opportunity for us. And I think it will just come down to taking our chances. So I'm positive. I don't think we'll lose the game. I think there's a good opportunity to get some more points here. But it's hard to call, really, because you just don't know what Wolves team is going to turn up. I think there's definitely another opportunity. Not as confident as I was for Brighton, but still think that, you know, it's there's 3 points there to be won.
Especially the Pedro Neto potential injury and Jose Sarr coming off at halftime as well. Sammy?
It kind of stinks of a really annoying, not very underwhelming 1-1. It could even be nil. I feel like the last couple of times we've played Wolves as well, we've kind of had similar results against them. Like, we just, you know, it's never really a blockbuster affair. I don't really know about this one. Hopefully we can continue the fine form and we can blow them away. I mean, we have it in us to do a 2-0 against them, but yeah, I'm just not sure. I don't know.
It's the matchup of the unpredictables, isn't it? It really is. And I agree with you guys. You don't know what Wolves side you're going to get. But I always fancy it against them. And one thing I am holding on to is that I think Muniz's energy and confidence is not going to go away by the first whistle. Trust me. He goes into that game completely confident and really buoyed, believing he can score goals. So he's going to be putting himself about in the same way. And I think that raises the energy levels of this whole team, as I said before. I think he's going to score again. I really do. Because he's going to get 90 minutes. Unless he gets injured, he will get 90 minutes. And I think he's going to score again. And I think they're capable of scoring. But I'm going to say 2-0. 2-0.
You like that?
I like that. Put money on that. Dad's on a roll. I agree. I feel like this is a Fulham win. That sounds overconfident and... maybe I'm being overconfident, but things are going well at the moment. I feel like every time we play Wolves, we always seem to struggle, but maybe this is that game where we just sort of snap out of it a bit. And Wolves have had a few injuries, a few things not quite going right for them. Fulham have everything going right for us at the moment, it seems. And so it really feels like this is one of those games where we walk into it and maybe walk it fairly easily and... maybe like a 2-0 or a 2-1 where they score late and it feels a bit edgy, but really we walk through the game fairly comfortably. Looking forward to watching this one because, like you all have said, you just don't know what you're going to get when you play against Wolves. You could get that Portuguese flair side that are just impossible to play against, or you could get the struggling team that we've seen for a couple of weeks now. So it should be a really good game this weekend, and looking forward to Fulham hopefully bringing home another win for us. Guys, I think we can probably wrap it up there. It's been really good fun having a chat about this game. It was a great game to watch, a great game to just soak in over the last couple of days, and it's been a good couple of weeks. Dave, you're a good luck charm for us so far. We've got Man United 2-1. Brighton 3-0. We need to keep you very close, and it's like one of those Buddhas. We'll rub your head every time we need a bit of good luck. I think everyone sitting around you needs to start rubbing David Crave's head every week.
Oh, God, don't say that.
It's bringing luck. It's bringing good luck. It's like you're fortunate I'm saying it right at the end of the podcast, not right at the start, because that's when you'll get the most listeners. But guys, thank you very much for joining us today. Dave, thanks again for jumping on. Really appreciate it.
No worries. No worries.
Sammy, thanks for joining.
Thank you very much for having me. Mama, I love you. Everyone's opinions, just don't listen to them. Our relationship is still rock solid. And please, general public, do not rub Dave's head.
Oh, please do. Please do. Dad, thanks for joining tonight.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. Dave, one thing I meant to ask you, are you traveling this weekend or are you on?
Unfortunately not. No, I've got a couple of family things to go to this weekend. So I'm going to miss this one. I went last year. I remember it being like 90 odd degrees and they blazed us with these pyros.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. Yeah.
But so I'm quite thankful to miss that, but I would like to be going really. I'm not able to make this one. So I'm just going to have to watch in like you guys and wishing the guys well.
That's right. Yeah. I'm not able to see my grandmother.
So. Yeah. you were able to, though, Sam. But anyway, thank you to everyone who's joined along on the live stream. Thank you to everyone who listens regularly. We really appreciate it. Please do continue to share us with your Fulham friends. Get some extra listeners onto the podcast. Really appreciate all the support. And as always, come on, you Whites.
Come on, you Whites.